Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the Geek Cave Podcast. I'm Darren.
Wait.
What?
Wait. 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 No. No.
Too late. I said it.
I'm Chad?
So I get to be Justin.
Oh. You lucky son of a bitch.
Well, hey, that means it's your segment.
My segment's going to be fucking short.
That's your one.
That's your one.
That's my one.
Let's try this again. Welcome to the Geek Cave Podcast. I'm Justin.
I'm Darren.
I'm Chad.
Apparently, we're trying something new this month, and it caught me off guard, so I just went with the script.
Well, you know, I got so much flack for interrupting you that one time. Now it's your segment. Do whatever the hell you want.
Today on Quilting for Beginners.
Fine. All right. We'll get the ever-important quilt demographic.
Oh, well, Elizabeth would be happy. TGC Liz. Oh, if there still are sponsors, the comic book segment is brought to you by Buzz Time, Great Minds Drink Alike, Shirt of Soros Digging Up
Clothing
Your Past
for
So You Can Look Rad Today, and GameStop Power to the Players.
All right, there we go.
Oh, and as I mentioned before, this is the comic book segment. One of the weirder ones we do because comics are weird.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yes, they are. All right, so let's get this hootenanny going. Darren, yeah. You got any news?
Oh, do I have news?
Oh, shit, boys, here we go.
All right. Both of my... Let's preface this by saying that everyone knows that we tend to lean a little bit toward DC Comics. But we don't hate Marvel.
Yeah.
We don't hate Marvel.
No, we don't.
Sometimes...
We've hated certain people at Marvel.
Yeah.
And some of their storylines haven't been the best, but we don't hate them as a whole.
Yes, but sometimes they make it really easy.
Please.
They make it real easy.
Okay, what now?
Okay, well, for starters, Marvel has not been doing well since DC Rebirth. They've been kind of getting their butts kicked sales-wise. Marvel VP of Sales, David Gabriel, in a recent interview during the Marvel Retailer Summit, blamed all their problems on diversity, saying, what we've heard is that people don't want female characters out there. I don't know if that's really true, but that's what we see in sales. They don't want our new diverse characters. They don't want female characters. And people are just turning up their noses. Despite the fact that Ms. Marvel and Miles Morales are two of the best-selling characters Marvel has, sure. Let's go in that direction, shall we? It has nothing to do with your writing. It has all to do with blaming the black people and the women. Good luck with that. He later pointed out and clarified, saying, look, our newer characters like Miles and Ms. Marvel, they're not going anywhere. But, you know, it's just how we're seeing our sales are dropping sales-wise. And it can't possibly be because DC's putting out a better product. It has to be... Because we, you know, it's just diversity. It's there's no defensible way to fix this statement. So I'm just going to let our listeners figure that one out.
And here, I was convinced you were going to say, he later clarified his statement by saying, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
And I messed up when I said that.
I should not have said that.
To be honest, to be fair, I think that press release was written by someone named Kyle Kelly Killian.
Oh, wow.
All right, this is where we're going. All right.
Yes, I'm naming names, but I'm not naming initials, so I mean that's something, right?
Shake my head.
Speaking of horrible white nationalism.
Oh, yes.
Nice segue.
I'm glad we're sticking with a nice, upbeat, positive message for our view, for our listeners.
Okay, so
one of these days we're gonna have to do a video. So just so when I say viewers, I'm not wrong.
You know, usually Marvel does everything right when it comes to the movie realm, and usually in the video game realm, they've put out some really good ones. But they sometimes do something completely, and if you love the alphabet, listen closely, ass backwards, completely dim-witted, extremely frustrating, goofy, hella idiotic, just kooky, loopy, majorly nitwittish, obtuse, poor, quirky, ridiculous, stupid, tactless, uninspired, vacuous, wacky, slightly xenophobic, yawn-inducing, and zany. Yes, I just used the entire alphabet to insult the writers of Captain America. Any goodwill that they've earned with me usually is replaced by apathy, because this latest storyline has, in my opinion, just gone a little too far and stomped all over a character invented by two Jewish guys. Jewish guys, keep that in mind. Captain America is usually the bastion of good in the Marvel Universe. Purest hero possible when it comes to morality, and now a Nazi.
Not just a Nazi.
A secret Nazi. See, with Steve Rogers' return to the role, we learn that a kid who is the personification of the cosmic cube, don't think about it too hard, kind of rewrote history to make it so Steve joined Hydra before becoming Captain America and was a double agent. But that was only retroactive. We were promised that, right? I mean, it's not like he was always a secret Nazi and that the Nazis actually won World War II. That would be stupid. And yet, yeah, it turns out the latest revelation from the Secret Empire arc, yes, Steve Rogers was always a Nazi. Before the time muckery happened, he was a double agent for Hydra, and the Nazis won World War II. But then the Allies got a hold of a cosmic cube and rewrote histories themselves and brainwashed Steve Rogers into being, you know, not a Nazi.
They were going to name him Bob.
All the Cube Kid did in last year's comics is just restore Rogers to how he had been before. So congratulations. One of your favorite and most iconic Marvel characters has secretly always been one of the worst types of people imaginable. As Marvel continues their practice of doing pretty much horrible things to Captain America anytime someone they don't like is in the White House. Now, this is not political commentary because... here, we don't care what party you like. It doesn't matter.
We just want you to listen.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to us. But it just seems like a massive coincidence.
We want them hits.
But it just seems like a massive coincidence that every time a member of a certain political party is in power in the U.S., Captain America either dies, quits the job and puts on a stupid costume with no pants and calls himself Nomad, or becomes a Nazi. You know, I'm just saying, with DC already kicking your asses, Marvel, maybe... just maybe you don't want to alienate some of your longtime fans.
Nah.
Pick a less obvious time.
Nah. Other than that, we have an interview. I want to welcome now into the Geek Cave, Gabe Denning. He is an author who's going to tell us all about a fantastic new book that is out now and available for you to pick up. Gabe, thanks for taking some time and joining us on the Cave.
Cool Cave.
Now, you know, I'm a big Sherlock Holmes fan. I think Chad is as well. We're both pretty well read. And you've got a book out, been out for a little while, that is kind of a twist on the whole Sherlock Holmes thing. It's called Warlock Holmes, A Study in Brimstone. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, the simple conceit is this. Everybody thought Sherlock was magic the way he made his deductions. I just did a version where he absolutely is. He's riddled with 1,000 demons, not super bright, and when Watson comes home, you know, wounded from Afghanistan and really needing somewhere where he can stay cheap, he gets thrown in with Warlock. Takes him about 2 days to realize there's something really wrong with his new flatmate, you know, and they start having adventures together. And just like the original, Warlock really needs Watson because, you know, Watson can tell him, like, no, you need pants if you're going to leave, you know, and sort of, like, guide him through what humanity expects. And then on the other side of the adventure, we have, you know, demon realms and magic realms, and they're all parodies of the original adventures, like the Speckled Band minus the Echo of the And, and they have to try and figure out what that means. And And usually Watson has the original answers. Normally he's wrong, and the answer is no, it's just the end.
So, you know, a character like Sherlock Holmes, beloved by many, there have been tons of incarnations. What kind of drew you to doing this kind of a spin on such a classic character?
Well, I always liked this kind of... I'm a geek. I'm dyed-in-the-wool geek and dyed-in-the-wool comedian. And, you know, they're just beloved characters. And, you know, what happened really was I realized that they sort of hadn't been treated this way much. In fact, tonight I thought of a pun, Warlock Holmes. I went running home to Google it to see what people had done because I'm like, oh my gosh, I bet that's great. And there was like nothing, just nothing. Back in 2012, and there was almost a degree of frustration where I'm like, well, fine. You know, if nobody else has written it, I'm going to fire up the computer. And, you know, and then 4 years after that, the first book came out in May of 2017. The second book, Hellhound of the Baskervilles, comes out. You know, book three comes out a year after that. So I'm in it for the haul now.
Nice. So at least a three-book plan. Do you what kind of reception have you been receiving?
You know, overall really positive. Honestly, I thought I was going to get completely flamed. You know, the web is just buzzing with people who are like, no, Jeremy Brett is the only Sherlock Holmes, and Benedict Cumberbatch can just die screaming, or Cumberbatch, and I really thought that I was going to get just flamed by people who loved their version of Holmes, but it hasn't really come yet. People seem to be pretty ready for a comic geek Holmes. Generally, response has been great. I got one person, a little bit light on the Holmesian intellectualism, and then I guess someone from my agency got boozy one night and wrote back to him and said, "Well, there's an ogre in his underpants on the cover. You were warned."
Nice. So, yeah. I mean, obviously, this is kind of a fun project, a fun way to kind of tackle Sherlock Holmes. Anything that you've encountered while writing these books, that, because, you know, sometimes creativity just kind of hits you in the middle of wherever. Have the books ever taken like a turn that not even you were really expecting to kind of go down this way, but it just happened to be funnier?
Yeah, you know, the theme. I didn't even expect the main theme of the first book until I started writing it. It's sort of about privilege and about being inside or outside. You know, you've got this character, Watson, who should be very high in Victorian society. He's a doctor. But he gets wounded in Afghanistan, comes home, there's no support for, you know, wounded soldiers. They're willing to let him die. And he meets these people who are literal monsters. I mean, the reason that Holmes and Lestrade and Grogson solve crimes is so they won't be blamed with them. You know, they solve the weird ones because they know they're weird. And it's like, well, if we don't find the murderer, they'll be hanging us next week. And Watson sort of sides with them. He winds up stepping outside the society he loves so much, and he'll still defend, you know, why you need to wear this exact hat to that exact place. But when it comes down to where his loyalties lie, well, now they lie with the monsters, who are, in a sense, you know, Lestrade has a scene where he's afraid of people. You know, he's like, yeah, people are my natural food, but there's 2 billion of them out there. And if I ever smile, you know, if they ever see these teeth, I'm done.
Yeah, it's a very interesting spin. So obviously, a lot there for sci-fi fans, a lot of references for classic Holmes fans. Now, putting Warlock Holmes aside for a second, what's your favorite incarnation of Sherlock Holmes? Is it the classic Sir Arthur Conan Doyle? Is it Robert Downey Jr. or Benedict Cumberbatch? Anything but yours?
Anything but mine, yeah. You know, the funny thing is I can't pick one now. I love the BBC stuff for how well it adapted the feel into a modern setting. I love House for how well it got that, you know, just misanthrope feel. I love, you know, you pick up a Batman and Robin comic, and whenever Batman goes greatest detective, you go, hey, you know, this feels familiar. And I love that Holmesian flavor almost anywhere I find it, you know. I don't have a favorite version of it. It's just a favorite seasoning of mine, and whenever I detect it in the geeky dish, I go, oh, this tasted a little bit Holmesian, you know.
Nice. Well, the first book is out now. Second one is out next month, and then you said the third one a year from now, right?
Yeah, they played a trick on all us dyslexic geeks. The first one was out May 17, 16. The next one's out May 16, 17. And then after that, they finally have to relent. They seem to have me on a 364-day cycle.
Well, it's easy to keep track. Now, obviously, the book is available Barnes & Noble, Amazon, anywhere else books are sold. You were telling me before we started our interview, and right before we let you go, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. You've actually done some work with Nintendo as well.
Yeah, it was kind of heartbreaking. I got hired as a localization editor, which is the coolest job. Like, one person in the history of the company had voluntarily left this position when I was there. They bring in a video game from Japan, and it's translated really poorly. The one I remember was I got a character who was described as, like, the whole thing. It doesn't say, like, you know, blue eyes or blonde hair. It just says, loneliness, lonely wolf. And I'm like, oh, it's like, I actually see what you're shooting for there. And this character's a lone wolf, you know, but it's just sort of broken phrasing and a lot of jokes that only Japanese people would get because, you know, some of it's about Japanese geography. And then our job was to write the English script and, you know, make more relatable jokes and references and the dialogue that hung together well. And it was so fun. But it was right before the world recession. Oh. So they hired like 10 of us. We did one game, and then they cleaned out the whole department.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. I got to do one game. It was style savvy.
Hey, the plus side is that is one more than anyone here on the Deep Cave has ever done.
Yeah. So, yeah, every now and then I can have 3 glasses of wine and play it until I see my name come up at the end and then just cry and cry.
All right. Oh, well, Gabe, it's been a pleasure having you on, and definitely want to pick up Warlock Holmes and the other 2 books in the series as they come out. And we would love to have you back on in the future to see how the whole project's going.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'd love to come. Thank you so much for having me.
And again, the book is Warlock Holmes. It's in bookstores everywhere, including Amazon.com, and sounds like a really fun read.
Truly, I love the title.
Yeah.
An interview, you say?
All right. That's all I got.
God damn it, Justin. We're going to just skip to the gaming section if you don't keep up.
Oh, I lost track. I thought we were already in the gaming section. Oh, anyway, Darren, you got anything else?
That's it.
All right, Chad, do you have any news?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay. Well, I do have a bit of news before I get on with this month's long box. As Darren leans on the table, holding his head up, you know, flashing his eyelashes at me, you know, looking all, oh, now Chad's doing it too. Aw. They're so cute. Like, you know, cute like homeless guys are, but still. Anyway. So I actually didn't know this, but when a long time ago when Star Wars was in movie theaters, yeah, there were comic books and toys and stuff. They were also in newspapers. There was a Star Wars comic strip. And IDW and Lucasfilms have come to an agreement, and they're going to republish those newspaper strips for the first time. This is the first time they're ever being collected. Star Wars, the classic newspaper comics, will contain 575 sequential strips that premiered on March 11th, 1979, and ran to October 5th, 1980. Huh. And this also includes every Sunday title header and bonus panels, meticulously restored to original color. So these are due to hit shelves. Well, Volume 1 is set to hit sometime soon. I don't have an actual date, So keep your eyes open for that. But volume one hits, it's going to run about, the hardcover, it's in landscape format, it's going to run about $50 cover price. So, you know, buy it for yourself or someone you really, really, really like. I won't be buying this for Darren, but...
You know, I was going to buy the book, cut it in half, and then give half to you and half to Chad, but now...
That would run about our normal birthday, Christmas, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, that's... I didn't even know that they were in comics, that they were in comic strips at one point. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, me neither.
All right. Well... As fun as this has been, I agonized over this for all of 5 minutes.
Don't quit the show, Justin.
No, I'm not quitting the show. I'm not quitting the show. I wanted to go as long as I could with the super pet long boxes, but I can't. They're not the characters themselves are not fun, except for Crypto. That will probably stand out as one of my best long boxes.
That was so ridiculous.
I thought, okay, after Lockjaw was kind of a meh, I'll go back to the Superman, the Super Family Pets. Speedy, the Super Cat, or is it Streaky? Okay. Yeah,
Streaky.
Streaky. No, not, didn't appear much. It was just kind of a throwaway character. Okay. Ooh, Beppo. Beppo the Super Monkey. Yeah, kind of the same thing.
Shut up and keep squeezing the monkeys.
Yeah, pretty much. That was the best and only appearance of Beppo was in Superman the Animated Series. So, after about 5 minutes of agonizing, I thought, all right, this glorious thing has to come to an end. And as promised, since I'm
Swift
ending
Wind.
The Super... No, even better.
Battle
Ladies
Cat?
And gentlemen, I present... No... I present to you
Orko.
Comet, the super horse.
Comet, the
Orko is not a pet. Orko is not a pet. He's a valued sidekick and a member of the team.
Orko secretly wishes the Man-at-Arms was dead.
How about Snarf? Does Snarf count as a pet?
Snarf is cannon fodder.
Snarf, Snarf, Snarf. Snarf is a meat shield, Snarf, Snarf. Comet, the super horse... You mean you guys weren't joking about that?
No.
I'm afraid to listen to this because I know this.
So, here we go. Tighten your butt cheeks, boys. It might get rough.
Clinch up, Legolas.
Oh, okay. So, and Comet is the name of two fictional comic book characters. And I'm going to get to both of them because they're both DC.
Oh, good.
And they both revolve around Supergirl, so just bear with me.
Oh, good.
The first... Okay. Okay, we're going to go with the pre-Crisis Comet first, okay?
All right, that's good.
Which is a good place to start. Comet the Super Horse first appeared in Action Comics 293 in February of 1962 and was created by Jerry Siegel and Kurt Swan, whatever. Comet the Super Horse is a fictional comic book character that is, out of all the super pets, not Kryptonian. He didn't hitch a ride on...
He's the only one.
He's the only one. Comet.
You can do it, man.
Comet was originally a centaur in ancient Greece named Byron. The witch Circe gave him a potion to turn him fully human after he prevented an evil sorcerer from, you know, killing her. But by mistake, she made him fully horse instead. Unable to reverse the spell because shenanigans, she gave him superpowers, including immortality. So here's this half-man, half-horse doing the right thing, gets crapped on, becoming full horse, and now has to live forever as a horse, but he can fly and shoot laser beams out of his mouth and be super, and has, like, super breath whinnies and what, I don't know. He's
terrible. Yeah. Breath whinnies.
Yeah. They all smell like carrots, but anyway, this evil sorcerer was, kind of pissed at, Byron because he foiled his plan. So he imprisoned him on an asteroid in the constellation of Sagittarius, because why not?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It would have been better if it was this, the constellation of Pegasus, because, the whole horse theme, but, whatever.
Two on the nose.
Yeah. He finally escaped when Supergirl's rocket passed, a millennia or so later, and broke the force field, enabling him to escape. Later, after Supergirl had grown up and become Supergirl, they met, and he went on a mission with her to the planet Xerox. It's a cheap copy, but it was there. Where, on this mission, a magical spell was cast that turned him fully human, but only while a comet passes through the solar system he is in. Any comet, any solar system. Wait, hold all your questions till the end. As a human, he adopts the identity of Bronco Bill Starr. Starr spelled with two R's because it's cool that way. Ringo Starr of the Beatles proved that. A rodeo trick rider whom Supergirl falls in love with. And it's reciprocal.
There it is.
And as humans, they kiss and they embrace and other things, one can be assumed. It's the 1960s, so, But eventually, when the comet goes away, he turns back into a horse. So, there's that. As mentioned with Crypto, he was also a member of the Legion of Super Pets, because why not? He's unaffected by Kryptonite and Red Suns because he is not Kryptonian. Oh, and there is, for a brief transition period, he turns back into a centaur when the comet comes close. So it's like he goes horse, centaur, full human.
Great.
So that's, he's great. Like a transformer.
Roll out.
So, My Little Pony friendship is magic? Is that...
No, this is something more than friendship, my friend.
Yeah. My Little Pony friendship with benefits.
There you go.
There we go. Comet made sporadic appearances and was eventually written out. Now we come to the post-crisis Comet, which made their first appearance in Supergirl number 14, October 1997. And this version of Comet was created by Peter David and Leonard Kirk. Oh. This Comet was originally introduced as a hero with flight and cold generation powers. He kind of looked like a man with three fingers and horse legs, long white hair, a star mark on his forehead. I think he had wings. Very I'm going to use my one. Majestic as fuck.
All right, there's your one.
That's the only way to describe this. It was revealed that Comet, the post-crisis, let's clarify, the post-crisis Comet, not the horse, the superhero, was actually Andrea Martinez, a gay stand-up comedian.
As you do.
As you do. Who, like her friend Linda Danvers, who was Supergirl, could shapeshift between her human and superpowered form. We come to find out that Comet's male form, his original, he was actually born Andrew Jones, a male jockey. He had been trampled by a horse and, let me finish, rebuilt by an organization called The Stable.
Of course he was.
As a superhuman with equine DNA.
Of course he was.
But as a result, when he's not in his superpowered form, you know, the horse legs, the, you know.
Yeah.
He can shapeshift back into a human, but only a female human.
Of course he can.
Well, he is a horse. Of course.
As true to form, Supergirl falls in love with Comet. You know, the half horse, half man.
As you would.
But spurns him when she finds out that he can only change back into a she. So, yeah.
Yep.
Spurns him, huh?
And I thought the 60s were weird. Nah, I was exaggerating. I was rejected is more apropos.
There you go.
I thought the 60s were weird, but man, the 90s were just as messed up.
Yeah, Supergirl got really weird before they straightened it out.
Yeah.
Chad's just looking at me as if, like, does it get weirder? Yeah, it gets weirder.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Comet didn't develop the wings until after Supergirl broke his heart. The Angel of Light used her powers to exploit Comet's heartbreak, turning him against Supergirl. This then enabled Comet to fully embrace their angel powers, transforming him/herself into a winged centaur.
Yeah, that angel ends up merging with Supergirl at one point, too. Because comics.
Yeah. Because comics, yes.
Chad just removed his headphones. He's out for a little bit. He's...
Yeah. Well, Yeah, Chad, you're in luck because I'm done.
And you wonder why there are so many people who don't take comic books seriously as an art form.
This was...
With that kind of shenanigans, I'm surprised that video games have taken so long. People should have jumped on that. It's like, well, it's better than a super horse. Sort of. Like,
sort of.
Like a sort of horse.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. Other than that, I knew about all this.
I know I shouldn't, but I'm going to go there because I've already made things difficult and awkward.
The live action interpretation's coming to the CW next fall.
Oh, God, no. I was going to put out there when Supergirl and Bronco Bill Starr were getting it on, at any point during, the preceding coitus, did she think, this feels familiar? I feel like I've done this before.
No. No.
Get it?
Yeah. Bad, Justin. It's bad. It's the joke everyone has made. It's funny because they made it, too.
That's your comic book segment. I would like to thank our now former sponsors, BuzzTime, Shirtosaurus, and GameStop. It was a pleasure having you help us out all these years.
It was nice. We had a good run, guys.
Maybe they just won't sponsor the comic book section anymore.
Chad, do you have any thoughts?
I have lots of thoughts. None of them are going to be shared right now.
Oh, and welcome to the comic book segment now sponsor free.
Send us your prayers.
So I don't know what I'm going to do for next month's long box, if I'm even allowed back in the cave next month.
We'll talk about it. Take us out, Justin.
I'll try to keep it weird yet fun. Oh, so that's been the comic book segment. Please download the gaming segment, the movie segment. It's been fun. We'll see you then.